Episode 30 of Speak Beastie for February 12th,
2017. I'm Ariel.
I'm Megan.
I'm Eleanor.
And I'm Lizzie. Guys, this is our 30th episode.
30th, flirty and thriving.
So that means we're flirty? The podcast is flirty?
Oh, it's always been flirty.
All right. All right, that's fair. And speaking of flirty, it's 2 days till Valentine's Day. So happy Valentine's Day to all of our listeners. Oh, yeah. We love you.
Yeah. Thanks for sticking with us for 30 episodes.
Send us your fantastic like a nice, Valentine's cards. Yeah.
You listen to us. We listen to you. You ask us questions. We try to answer them. You know, it's a good thing we've got going here. Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Please visit audible.com/speakbeastie to get a free 30-day trial.
And now for the Phoenix Register. So speaking of audiobooks, Eddie Redmayne will actually be narrating the Fantastic Beasts audiobook. The newly recorded audiobook will be available on March 14th. So you can actually pre-order it right now if you so desire. It'll be 2 hours long, so 2 hours of Eddie Redmayne's melodious voice in your ears.
You're going to need to take a half day off work on March 14th.
Yeah. Just that'll be
for reasons.
About a month from now, so not too long, really. So in other news, Fantastic Beasts the film will be released on 4K. 3D, video on demand, Blu-ray, and DVD on March 27th, and will be available for digital download on March 13th. So, here's how you can plan out that week. Download it digitally, and then listen to the audiobook the next day, and your life is fantastic.
Oh, wow.
Oh, you did the thing. You said it.
I did the thing.
Aw. Good job.
Really, though, the timing of that's really, really good. It's almost like they did it on purpose.
It's like there's Why? One marketing department. I
don't Suspicious.
I genuinely hope that it was on purpose. Like, I really hope it was on purpose. I'm sure it was, but
it definitely was.
Eddie Redmayne.
So, don't worry.
Eddie Redmayne is doing the audiobook. I guarantee this is all tied up.
Yeah.
It's not like J.K. Rowling going off on her own.
Glad my concerns are laid to rest.
Yep.
I hope someone at the marketing department is listening to this and just like throws their hands up in the air and was like, oh, I didn't even realize. Wow, that's cool
that's
how that
the
worked
case,
out.
Then they need to hire a new marketing department. And
I'm available.
I volunteer as tribute, so.
I said it first, so therefore dibs.
Well, we can both be in the marketing department. You know,
okay,
like, both do it.
I just don't feel like competing against you.
Well, we would,
and I know
we
that's how that
be
would go down.
Competing,
dude,
we would be on a team.
But I just get the sense that I'd want to one-up you on everything, so.
Okay.
You know, the last time we were on an episode together, we couldn't fully be ourselves because it was with Dan, and I was like, don't make fun of Megan or Michael or anyone. Don't be yourself, Ariel.
I like that you have to like make a special note to yourself. Yeah. Don't make fun of Megan. It's so tempting.
Well, like, I mean, I make fun of the people that like I'm comfortable with.
And, no, I know. I do the same thing.
You know, like I shit on everyone on the podcast because it's fun.
You should have done it. It would have like made him feel like it was a safe space, and then he might have like accidentally told us something.
He told us some things that
he
were
did.
Borderline
some
inappropriate, and I for one really enjoyed it.
Yeah, did Igor include those things?
Oh yeah, that was in the episode.
Oh yeah.
What episode number was that? For 28? Anyone who's listening to this episode and didn't okay, excellent.
Not for Eleanor, who's definitely listened to it.
Yes, of course. I listen to all of them all the time. Every day.
Every day. So for our final bit of news, we actually got the Ilvermorny song, the deleted scene that had been talked about, and we actually will be discussing Queenie later on in the episode for main discussion. But if you haven't yet seen the video, be sure to go to MuggleNet.com, the Fantastic Beast tag, and look for the article that pretty much just says watch the deleted Ilvermorny school song. So watch that and then, well, no, pause it, watch it, and then listen to what we've got to say about it.
We stand as one, united against the Puritan. We draw our inspiration from Good Witch Morrigan. For she was persecuted by common wandless men. So she fled from distant Ireland, and so our school began. Oh, Ilvermorny, Massachusetts, we choose it,
we choose it,
the wizard school supreme. Your castle walls, they kept us safe, our days with you a dream. You taught us all a magic, and now one thing's quite clear.
Where we roam,
our one true home,
our one and own,
is Ilvermorny, dear.
Woo! I choose it! Woo! I want to be a wizard.
Beautiful.
Aww, that's lovely.
I didn't know, you know, really what to expect the song would sound like, because we've only ever had, like, the Hogwarts song, and, you know, it's like, that song is like, yeah, to whatever tune you want.
Classic.
So, yeah, to have this one that Alison Sudol helped write herself, and, I don't know, their voices sounded really, really nice together, and I loved the song, but I can see why they cut it out, because I didn't realize kind of the placement of when it was, because it was, like, between, it was between, like, serious moments, but it, like, chopped up the flow of that serious tone, because, you know, then Frank goes all Thunderbirdy and is like, warning, warning, so, yeah.
I didn't know you spoke Thunderbird.
yeah. I am a Thunderbird, so I guess it's a qualification.
It actually works.
It's like being an heir of Slytherin. You've got to speak Parseltongue, so. Yep, I speak Thunderbird.
Kudos.
I'm a Thunder Squawker. Would that be... I needed this is not.
Did I tried you just to think of something. Thunder Squawker?
Yeah, I tried to think of something the caliber of like Parseltongue / Parselmouth. And that was the best I could do.
Came up with Squawk.
I mean, he's a bird, so yeah.
Alright.
Why am I still on this podcast? Why do y'all let me be on this podcast? Why has no one yet been like, okay, guys, we really need to let Ariel go. She sucks.
We've done that a few times, but you just won't leave.
Oh my god. I get to make fun of you. You don't get to make fun of me.
It works both ways, I'm afraid.
It's not how this works. No. No.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to get Pierre in here, and he's just going to tell you off.
But yeah, this song is, like, gorgeous, and it's sort of, like, but it is because, I forgot that, like, Alison Sudol was in A Fine Frenzy, and, like, she was actually a singer before she was an actor, and you're just like, oh, yes, I see that, of course, when you see the scene. That's lovely.
Yeah, that was how I initially knew who Alison Sudol was, and... before the movie even came out or anything, I was like, she's gonna be my favorite character because I used to love her music. And, you know, I just jumped to conclusions. But she lived up to those expectations, absolutely. And I know we're gonna discuss that a lot in main discussion. But as for the song, it's definitely different from her own, like, personal style of music, I think. Like, I think it fit very well within the wizarding world and, like, how, you know, how it would have sounded. I was like, oh, that's a cute little Ilvermorny song. Like, it fits and it makes sense, and I liked that moment between the sisters, and I wish they had found another place for that scene within the movie, because it still could have worked.
Yeah.
But
it would have been in a weird place. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think our school songs, though, it's lovely. I mean, I always thought with the Hogwarts one, like, it's hilarious when you read it, but you sort of...
Yeah.
Would you really want to listen to the whole thing, like, in a movie? Yeah. Probably not.
Yeah. Man, they even cut the Hogwarts school song out of
the
movies.
I know! Ugh.
Why even record them in the first place?
It shows up in Goblet of Fire, but is that the extended version?
Yeah. That's like that's the ABC Family freeform version.
Okay.
Yeah. I know I was just watching that
last weekend, and I was like, wait, no, I definitely remember hearing that. But...
No.
But no, in the next movie, if we go to Babatons, not that we will, but if we do... We probably won't hear that school song either. Just chucking it out there.
Wasn't their school song? Because they kept
doing that. That's the whole song.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I thought.
And then Durmstrang's is,
They like it succinct.
Yeah. I appreciate that.
All right, well, that's it for the Phoenix Register for this episode. Lizzie, you want to take it away with the Owl Post?
So this week for the Owl Post, we had a few write in, so thank you, as always. First is from Marjolaine, and she writes, "Girls, you are the real unicorns." And Marjolaine, if that's not how you intended me to say it, I apologize, but I think it's lovely that you said that. She adds, "About French magic, I could write an essay about how I see the French wizarding world. And knowing Joe is a Francophile, learned French, and gave a French name for Voldemort, I can't wait to discover her views of Paris in her world. Sadly, I don't think we'll see Beauxbatons, but it would be cool to meet Nicolas Flamel. He lived in Paris, after all, and would be the perfect guide to discover the city."
Ah.
By the way, Muldoon is indeed our word for muggles. It's not Joe's word, but I hope they will keep it.
Huh.
I feel like we talked about Nick Flamel once or twice.
Yeah. I feel like we talked that's about cool Muldoon. Point. Or am I making
we
that
did.
Up?
That's why she's confirming that's the
French
word for muggle, because one time we were like, it sounds like moldy. I think it was me that said that. So
just, you fool.
Yeah. Very sophisticated. I like the point about Nicolas Flamel. We may
he's
have touched
born,
on
right?
it before, but yeah, he's 665 in 1990, whatever.
Oh, so he's definitely around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just a little bit younger.
Just a little, though. Not a lot. Just a little.
Marginally younger.
He's maybe only like 612.
Practically a baby.
Probably wouldn't recognize him if you saw him. I mean, I would I know we've talked about Flamel, but I would really love if they reintroduced that character to get a little bit more information than a school book in the back of a chocolate frog card.
Well, we are going to see Dumbledore, and we know they were buds.
That's true.
Yeah.
So it's a possibility.
So, Joe, once again, maybe. Little plug. I know you're out there. Nick Flamel. Like we said, only 612. You can cast that easy.
I could play that.
But I wonder.
I always wondered
with
that, like with the like with the like you know the Philosopher's Stone Elixir of Life. does that just kind of freeze your age? Like,
I was just about to say that. Like, could you, would you look like you were 30?
Would it just,
or would you look like you were 600?
Like, yeah, I was thinking it might be like the ring in Lord of the Rings, where it's kind of like he just looks like he's middle-aged for a very long time. Just he ages just incredibly slowly.
Or like Edward Cullen.
Just stays in like 20. Well, oh, sorry, like 17. It has to
how
be
long have you been 17? A while.
How long have you been 612?
A while.
This is like the second time today someone has brought up Twilight. And it's just throwing me off because I'm like, I haven't heard about Twilight in years, and all
I
of a sudden, twice
of
in
SNL,
one day.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I haven't either.
No.
And then it was like, oh,
no, it was in my poetry
it?
Class.
Honestly, Freeform has been having marathons, and I have been watching them because it's hilarious.
Oh, Megan.
It is. It's really funny.
I'm just kidding. It's fine. I ate that up when I was a teenager, so it's okay.
We all did.
No shame.
I've actually.
And then I hated myself afterwards.
Yep.
I have a Taylor Lautner cardboard cutout.
You didn't. Oh my god.
No, I still do. We place him around the house and scare people. It's really fun.
Oh, wait. Okay.
It's a good time all around.
Time out for a personal story. One time, Taylor Lautner filmed a movie at my high school.
I thought you were going to say house.
It was a really bad movie. And we also, like, touched his arm.
Oh my god.
That's your story.
Wait, what movie was this?
It was called...
Yeah, what's the bad movie?
I forget what it's called. Abducted, I think. He's like...
It's weird.
Like,
that's the one I was going to guess.
Collins' daughter and their...
I love Lily Collins.
Abducted.
How dare you call her that?
Isn't that what she is?
Yes, but I mean, she has a name.
Yeah, well, I didn't remember it off the top of my head, all right? I needed to use another identifier.
Abduction?
Okay. Yeah, because it's not abducted.
Yeah.
You idiot.
Oh my god.
Things are getting vicious. Hampton High School. Shout out. If anybody from Hampton High School listens to this podcast, which I
doubt.
They're
like, yeah!
Go Talbots. Anyway.
Talbots? That was your mascot?
Yes. It's an extinct dog.
Duck or dog?
Dog.
Well, that's just sad
like,
now.
I like the questions. Concept of an extinct duck better, though. Anyway.
Oh,
by the way, to any of our listeners out there, if they want to see a truly glorious picture of Megan Kelly, you should sponsor us on Patreon, and you should check it out on our Speak Beastie Fandom on Facebook.
Oh, I was like, wait, what picture are you talking about? It's the one
I
just
posted. I was like, I thought maybe she found a picture of you in high school touching Taylor Lautner's arm.
Talking about high school. No, yeah, it's the
my
one
research
I just posted
skills.
In the common room, and I look great.
Not you too. Squawk.
I like your shirt.
Yeah, it's a good shirt.
It's thematic. Mm. I'm wearing a Makusa shirt for those of you who cannot see me right now. Anyway,
are
please,
we just gonna start
please go back to the podcast
wearing?
Before I further embarrass myself.
So we're not that kind of podcast, Megan. Wow.
Please.
Take it away, Lizzie.
So, like I said, it'd be really cool to see Flabelle, and if anyone has any suggestions as to how the elixir works, maybe if they want to go digging into Sorcerer's Stone and see if there's any, like, physical description of Flabelle on the Chocolate Frog card, you know, always drop us a line right into us, and we'd love to, you know, talk about it further next week. Our other comment is from Rosemurda, and she says, perhaps, as you suggested, after her presidency, Sir President Pickery, she could go after the escaped Grindelwald with the newly restored graves found unharmed in a cupboard somewhere. Not sure how this could fit in with the continuing new Tina adventure, though. Still want your thoughts on the name of film 2 and whether Theseus will make an appearance.
I think he will, just knowing JKR's penchant for like bringing up important details early on and then not bringing them up again for a while, and then when it comes up you're like, oh my god, yeah, she said that 3 books ago. And they do mention Theseus in the film. They're like, oh, you're the brother of the Auror, Theseus Scamander? And he's like, yeah. And then they move on. And so why would...
they said war hero.
Maybe.
Scamander's motto.
But why...
I'm sorry I spoke.
Any opportunity to criticize me. I see how...
No. I was just confused.
You were sorry. Correct, Ariel. You were right.
Ariel's right. words. Yeah, so I just feel like them bringing that up means that he's gonna have to come up again, because if
he will.
It wasn't gonna be important, then why would they bring him up in the first place?
Right.
Yeah, because there are very few throwaway lines in J.K. Rowling's world, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. And if there are, people are, like, super quick to notice, like, that whole Mark Evans
yeah.
kid. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, good old Mark Evans.
That exactly. He just happened to have a last name. That's all.
I wonder who they would cast for Theseus. So I Googled,
damn, that's what I was about to say.
So I Googled actors that look like Eddie Redmayne.
Sexy gingers.
Jennifer Garner came up, but I don't think that's the. I don't think that's it.
Nah, Dreamcast right there.
I don't know. I'd be up for like Richard Armitage.
Oh yeah,
he'd make a good. Oh wow, like, war hero.
I said that really scary. Yes.
I'm surprised you didn't say Taylor Lautner with your whole infatuation
Taylor
with him.
Taylor Lautner. One time I touched his arm.
Oh my gosh.
Could we get Ed Sheeran?
Oh.
You said sexy ginger, right?
Yeah, and I meant it.
Ah, don't be mean.
In fact, he's in Sydney right now.
He's not sexy. He's okay. Adorable.
Yeah. You need to watch like one of his live lounges, and then your tune will change.
Yeah, but he's not war hero sexy. Come on.
No.
It's just a war hero with a guitar. He's like the
selling it.
He's like the bard of the war, you know, they have that like band that goes around sometimes to cheer everybody up.
He's the little drummer boy.
Yeah, like in the Civil War, they had that flute player that had to run around on the battlefield.
Megan, are you okay?
I don't know.
Okay, so Ed Sheeran, out. Jennifer Garner, in.
How old do you think Theseus would be? Because it's the older brother to Newt, right? Yeah, it is older.
And that could be anywhere from 1 year to 50 years, so I don't know.
Well, I Googled British actors over 40, and then I did British actors mid-30s. I don't know. I just typed in British. Christian Bale, I don't think that'll happen.
Yeah, no.
You're really narrowing it down there, Lizzie.
I know. What about Jude Law?
I still like Jennifer Garner / Ed Sheeran.
It's okay, down the list is Colin Farrell. Hmm.
Yes, yes. Cast him for everything.
Oh, look, and then there's Jason Isaacs.
Yeah. They're going to say Statham, and I was like, yes.
I thought you were going to say Sudeikis. There's too many Jasons.
Those are too many Jasons.
Anyway, I stand by Richard Armitage.
I will accept that option.
So that's it for this week's Owl Post. Remember that you can always contact us on our website, speakbeastie.com, and we would love to hear your thoughts on everything that's going on and add to our future discussions.
All right, so for this episode's main discussion, we are discussing Queenie. Yay!
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 Ooh. Everybody loves Queenie.
This is true.
So Queenie Goldstein, younger sister of Tina and future sister-in-law of Newt. Pottermore has this whole big long bio on her. Queenie Goldstein is Tina's vivacious little sister who she lives with in New York and works with at MACUSA. An accomplished legilimens, Queenie has strong mind-reading skills and can't help but listen in on people's thoughts. After meeting Jacob and Newt, she finds herself especially drawn to the very charming Jacob. And that's all that Pottermore has to say about Queenie, which is disappointing, because it should be a lot more. But in the future, I'm sure it'll be a lot more, because we'll be seeing a lot more of her. So we do know, thanks to Joe tweeting, that Queenie was sorted into Puckwudgie at Ilvermorny. We don't know much more, you know, if, like, two houses wanted her or anything else. We know Seraphina Pickery was the most recent person to have been, like, asked by all four houses. Like, well, that's what it said on Pottermore, at least.
Does that mean that it's rare for only one to choose you? Like, do you, because I mean, most people have some sort of combination.
Yeah, I'm not sure. That's something I really want to know more about.
Yeah.
And I wish Joe had talked more about instead of just being like, yeah, so this is a thing that happens. Especially when at Hogwarts, it's kind of like an unspoken thing that you can kind of choose, but not like super really. Because Harry, you know, would have otherwise been in Slytherin if he wouldn't have been like, no, not Slytherin. So, yeah, because he was...
That was always a very bizarre part of Harry Potter. Like, the sorting. Like, because especially the idea that, like, Ron had absolutely no idea what was going to happen and Hermione had no idea. And Hermione had read Hogwarts of History by that point. Like, he was just kind of... But somehow... All the information magically disappears for all children under the age of 12. You're just like, I don't understand how that happens. But anyway.
Yeah. Like, you think it would, word would have leaked that, oh, it's a sorting hat. It's gonna be okay. But I think with Ron, it was like, Fred and George were joking that, like, you had to do these trials or something. And that I can understand. But you think, like, Percy would have pulled him aside and been like, look, it's okay, it's just a sorting hat. Like, nothing bad is gonna happen.
But you would have thought after Bill and Charlie and Percy had all gone through to do it, like, wasn't like he wasn't alive when that happened. Could have just...
Yeah.
Well, with the all the Ilvermorny stuff, I just find it weird that we didn't see more of that in the film because... Like, we got all this info ahead of the film, and I don't know. I mean, was that just, like a clever marketing tool, or, like, is that going to be relevant at some point?
First off, yes, definitely a clever marketing tool, but secondly, I hope it comes into a bit more play in the next films, but, I mean, I don't think it necessarily would have to at all. I mean, unless they end up actually going... to Ilvermorny for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, maybe that's why she dumped all that information, because she thought, okay, now I can push it aside. I don't have to worry about explaining it to people. So,
maybe.
Who knows? I know we can be a bit greedy and want even more after she's given us so much.
A bit greedy. But... And then we get annoyed when she tells us too much information.
Yeah.
Sirius's
birthday.
Like, this week so she had that. Fun. Did you see how, like, this week she had that Twitter war about, what was it? Someone was getting annoyed about 666 was the age of Nicholas Flamel. And she was like, yeah, Creature's 666. And then everyone was like, but you said house elves only live till 200.
Yeah.
It was like,
oh, God.
Okay.
She was just being snarky. Like, calm down.
Calm down. It was fun.
If I were her, I'd be like, I literally don't remember ever saying that, but you guys write down everything I say, so, like, I don't know. I feel like at some point she's got to be like, oh my god, stop.
She wields so much power, and...
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, so anyway, back to Queenie.
Right.
Sorry.
We did on episode 18 of Speak Beastie discuss at length how Queenie is a Legilimens. So if you want to go back and listen to that and hear all about the history of Legilimency, and at that point it was pretty much pure speculation on how it would affect Queenie. But now that we know a little bit more about how her power extends and what she's really capable of, I think, you know, it's very safe to say she's much more powerful than Voldemort ever wishes he could have been at Legilimency, but hers is more, you know, like in the movie when she's reading Newt's mind kind of inadvertently. She can't exactly control it, which is different.
And she doesn't really ever use it to her personal advantage.
No, like, no.
She'll use it to help people or to, like, try to understand them better, but from what we saw of her in the movie, she's never used it to, like, take advantage of someone.
No. And even at that point when Newt asks her, like, you know, please don't read my mind, she's even dishing out advice and being like, you know, you need a giver, not a taker. So, yeah, that's very true. She definitely lived up to the kind of previous descriptions we'd gotten of her, that she was kind and caring. That's definitely something that was conveyed in the movie, that she puts other people first for the most part. And even with her, like, you know, so many people could take that power and use it for bad. Like, even in just the smallest of ways, like, you can hear someone saying something, like, bad about you, so you trip them or something. You know, just little things like that. And she uses it to make the world just a little brighter. I'm like, oh, good old Queenie.
I don't know. Is there anything about her, though, like, doing something? Oh, I guess we don't have any information, but I just wondered if she did do something pretty bad with it at school and Tina had to come in and sort of clean it up, and then that's why she sort of sticks to, you know, like less prominent vocational roles, and the reason why she's not, you know, hanging around people all the time is partly because she's scared that she will stuff up again.
The way I saw it was, it's kind of like being an empath, in the sense that, you know, it's so overwhelming being around so many people and so many thoughts and feelings and knowing what's going on. And I think that's kind of why she does tend to isolate herself or surround herself with people that she knows very well, like Tina, and eventually Jacob and Newt. But I think it would be overwhelming if she had to work in a very, like, gosh, okay, just even picturing it right now, can you imagine just, like, working retail and knowing everyone's thoughts and just, you know, that person over there hates that shirt and that person over there is stealing, or just, you know, just so much going on. I think that's why she closed in on herself a little, because after a certain point, you just don't want to deal with it.
Yeah, well, I get that. The other question I wanted was, like, did they know about her at school? Because I feel like if they did, someone should have recruited her into a different position, but she obviously kept it secret. So
that's true.
In which case, which I think is just incredible for an 11 to 17-year-old to manage to keep something like that under wraps, which is why I sort of think there must have been some incident where Tina had to help fix things up and sort of smooth things over. I don't know. I was just thinking about it anyway.
Yeah, that makes sense for both of their characters.
Yeah. And given that Tina is the older sister, I think it probably helped Queenie out a lot to have her sister, you know, going through the school experience with her as a young child. And, you know, by the time Tina graduates, Queenie probably has a good enough sense of how to rein in on her power and, you know, not, like, run around telling everyone, like, hey, guess what I can do. And it kind of makes me think of my own experience of school with my sister. Like, I was in kindergarten, first grade, when my sister was in fourth grade and fifth grade. And I was horribly shy as a kid. Just would not say, like, much of a word to anyone, which, you know, knowing me now, you're like, what? But having, like, an older sister there who, you know, would come to me on the playground and come pick me up from, like, you know, the after-school activities and everything, and everybody would be like, oh, that's your sister? Like, I can kind of relate to that, and it helped me open up more, and it was just her mere presence that did it. It wasn't anything really special that my sister did. She just was there. So that's why I'm kind of visualizing that scenario for the Goldsteins.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I was also thinking, because their parents both died quite young, right?
Right. Yeah. According to the wiki,
and I mean,
it says... Sorry.
Well, my other question is that, is legilimency, is that hereditary?
Oh.
In which case, if her mother had it or her father had it, and they knew, you know, the kind of issues that could be brought about, was she trained at a young age how to deal with it?
So Queenie was like Elsa.
A little bit, actually, yeah.
Don't feel... Don't let them know.
I didn't want to say anything. But yeah, the entire time you were like, oh, and she had to, like, learn to rein it in all on her own. I was like, oh my god. We're in Disney World. If it's hereditary, do you think... I'm wondering if it's kind of like... Like, does it activate at a certain point in your life?
Well, I mean, I was thinking about it because Voldemort, that... Legilimency was genetic because they said that Slytherin was a great legilimency and Voldemort was as well. So it must be genetic. Sorry, what did you say?
I was thinking about, like, when it starts, like when you can start, like, reading the minds and everything. Because for Tom Riddle, you know, he did it quite young because he was in the orphanage and he was able to hear everyone's thoughts. But, you know, he also had a far more troubled past than Queenie did. So I'm wondering if maybe, like, it, like, comes about at a certain time.
She still lost both her parents at a young age.
Well, yeah, so. No. I am, yeah. But she also wasn't living in an orphanage alone.
Yeah. But I don't know. That's another question as well. It's like nature versus nurture, like, different ways they... sort of their legilimency manifested and why Voldemort went like that and Queenie went the other way. I don't know.
But maybe that'll help bring Ilvermorny into something. If something did happen at school, that could be, like, essentially their gateway to bring Ilvermorny into the story, like, to do flashbacks about their childhood, to see them at school. And that way now we have all that foundation of information based on the school. We know where it is and how it started. And we know, like, oh, they went to school. We know that. We know there's a school. So at least they can just, like, cut straight to a flashback. And theoretically, as long as you've seen the first one and you're in a general know, you know what's going on.
Yeah.
I'm all for knowing more than I need to when it comes to Potter. So bring it on. Do it.
Yeah, definitely.
Give it to me. Still want that encyclopedia, Joe. Not gonna forget.
Yeah, I'm like, Pottermore is a poor imitation of what I was expecting, bucko.
It's like the cheat sheet version. I want the whole thing.
Yeah, I want it all in one big, good, leather-bound, just tome.
Yeah. she's a half-blood?
That's what the wiki said.
Which wiki?
I don't know. The Harry Potter wiki.
Oh, okay. I don't know why I thought there was other wikis out there.
Wikipedia. No, I'm just kidding. But it says, and again, I don't know I don't know where this information is coming from. It says their parents died when they were young. When Tina and Queenie were young as a result of dragonpox. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, if they're half-bloods, that means, you know, one of their parents had to have been a nomad. So I didn't know dragonpox affected nomads or muggles. So I don't know. That's why I kind of put a question mark behind that because I wasn't too sure.
One of her parents could have been muggle-born.
That's true.
Yeah, because they call Harry half-blood, and both of his parents were wizards, but his mom was muggle-born.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think that the diseases would still affect muggles. It's the same way I think how, like, magic affects them, you know? Aunt Marge blew up real quick, you know? It's not like
But then they would have to have entire departments of people in the Ministry of Magic controlling magical diseases from getting into the non-magical population. That just seems completely unrealistic.
Yeah.
That's what seems unrealistic.
Yeah. Well, just thinking about that.
That's where
government.
We draw the line.
I know.
But like, well, I mean, because obviously they get the diseases themselves, so they haven't.
But I mean, Jacob got sick from like the Mertlap.
I feel like that's a different.
I mean, it could be. This is me trying to stick on one side and provide a counter argument.
I wonder, like, if dragon pox is just what we call chicken pox. Like, maybe it's the same thing.
Well, there was this whole big thing about the cure for dragon pox. I don't know. I just...
this is why we need more information.
Yeah, it's a whole thing I just can't even get into right now. So, but the etymology of Queenie's name, both first and last name, from the wiki also, says Queenie is an affectionate name derived from the term queen, which is thought to be derived from the old English word quen. That's how I'm pronouncing it. I'm sticking
That's
with it.
How you pronounce it.
Goldstein is an occupational German name, meaning gold, with Stein being translated to stone. So she's literally... Who added that?
Me.
So she's literally... she's literally a queen with a golden heart.
Or a golden beer stein.
Perfect.
I do like that Newt and his Niffler find Goldstein sisters gold.
Yeah.
That's punny.
I just think it's cute because I feel like this name, like, I love her name. I wouldn't change her name for anything. But I feel like it's when you try to name, like, characters in, like, your fanfic and you're like, oh, let's look up what the names mean. And then you pick the ones that, like, literally are characteristics of your character.
Yeah.
So that's why I was like, she's literally a queen of gold, like, with a heart of gold. Like, I found it amusing. Still love the name. Wouldn't change a thing. You good, boo-boo.
All I was thinking of was, like, Ebony Ravenway. I was just like...
Oh, my God.
So much meaning in that name.
You forgot Ebony Darkness Dementia? Wasn't that her name?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yes.
And then I forget her friend's name, but it was equally exciting.
They were very inconsistent because sometimes it was Eobny.
Oh, yeah.
Other than
classic
Ebony,
literature.
So. Y'all are making me want to read those tonight, so.
It's not having that effect on me at all.
Fantastic fan fiction. You know, is there any Fantastic Beasts fan fiction out there? I'm sure there is.
There
I just
is. Hold on.
There's...
Oh, wait, right, because Credence and Graves. Okay, never mind, sorry.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Is it called Graves?
I'm just tired.
This is a rabbit hole I didn't want to fall into.
Yeah, there's about 3,000 on AO3 if anyone's interested. So, not great, but not bad.
Why must I be so busy after this? Ugh. Man, I could be reading fan fiction all night. So yeah, as we know, Queenie was portrayed by Alison Sudol, a queen herself. She's amazing. If you have not listened to her music as a fine frenzy, I highly recommend it. That music, actually, I used to listen to it when I was really sad, and it just perked me right up. Or made me even sadder, because it was just so beautiful. So, that sounds bad. But, like, you know what? You know, like, when you listen to music, and you're just like, it's so good. I'm so sad about my life. Okay, I don't know.
I'm sorry, I did not listen to you, because I'm looking at all the Fantastic Beasts fan fictions.
Wow.
There's not many straight couples.
No, there isn't.
Just letting you know. I tried to... Yeah, huh? What did you say? Oh.
Makeup? Nakeb?
Yeah.
Newton Jacob?
No, Jacob Jute? Which would...
I don't know about that.
Speaking of relationships with Jacob, I wanted to talk about Queenie's relationship with Jacob, because please it's do. Kind of the primary romance of the film, despite Newt and Tina being more central characters. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that Queenie immediately takes to Jacob, given that she can read his mind, and it kind of confirms for the audience that, like, Jacob is as genuine and, like, good-hearted as he appears to be. And I also find it interesting that she knows that Jacob has these, like, dirty thoughts about her when he sees her, like, change her shirt or whatever, but it doesn't seem to, like, bother her at all. And I can't decide if I find that to be an admirable quality, a sign of the times, or an insult to feminism.
You know, we don't know his exact thoughts. She just says something along the lines of, you know, basically every guy thinks this when they see me, or something.
Yeah.
So maybe it could have been as innocent as she's beautiful, or
right.
Wow, like, I don't know. Durr. So, yeah. Or just
that's nothing. True.
No, I'm kidding. If somebody's mind went literally blank when they saw you, I would feel horrible, not good about myself. Yeah, I don't know. I know Joe, her writing it, she probably meant it to be, you know, Queenie, like, confident in herself and not so much like, don't worry, I know how I look, like,
yeah,
in a snarky, weird way.
Because there's also the guy in Macusa who kind of is, like, looking at her funny when she's trying to leave with the case.
Yeah.
And while that situation is, like, more high pressure, it seems like that interaction shakes her up a little bit more. So, yeah.
But also, I think when Jacob's in that position at that point, like, he sort of gets a bit struck dumb by her, but there's also a lot of other stuff that's going through his head, because he's like, where the hell am I? What am I doing? What's going on? Like, and they're doing, you know. So her impression of him, I think she would just get this impression of, like, you know, probably a sort of bit of anxiety and, like, confusion, and then sort of just this, like, wow, and then, I mean, and I think because he obviously, I think he knew she was magical from the very beginning, so it would just be sort of like, I think he would just be like, oh my god, I'm not sure it would be so much as, like, I don't know, I think it would be different if she was just a random person on the street and none of all that other stuff had happened. I don't know. I just wonder, maybe his thoughts might have been a bit different. But I think in that situation, I think they probably would have been just very straightforward. I don't know. That was my thought on it.
Yeah. I think that makes sense.
Yeah, I want to bring it back to when she was in Macusa trying to escape with the case.
Yeah.
And I saw something that was posted on MuggleNet that was like, can we just like, give a shout out to Queenie for basically, oh man, what did it say? I wish I had posted this in the doc before, but it's like, you know, she gets out of that situation because she says, oh, I've got lady things. And I just think she's so, like, she knows how to deal with people. And part of that could have been just, like, reading his mind. And, oh, he's uncomfortable with that kind of talk. Or even just a product of that time period when even, you know, searching through a woman's bag or anything would have been scandalous. So yeah. I just love that situation and how she's good on her feet and how she seems innocuous enough, but she's not someone to be underestimated. She's definitely much smarter than she gives herself credit for. Especially when they're talking at the dinner table and she's like, oh, Tina's the worker. I'm just a secretary. And I'm like, oh, girl, come on. You're good at what you do. You're better at dealing with people, because as we can see, Tina.
I think that's a very, like, that commentary, I think, is very much a sign of our times. I think in the 1920s, you know, women were only just beginning to join the workforce. So that as, like, a sign of social status, I don't think it was quite as entrenched for women. So when she says that, I'm not sure if she's actually, I don't think she's putting herself down there. I think it's much more of a statement of fact.
Well, as I was watching the movie and seeing, like, you know, they have a female president, it seems that the wizarding world in America was a little more advanced in that area, possibly. So maybe that's why I kind of got the sense that she was...
I'm always confused about J.K. Rowling and, like, women's roles in the wizarding world, because they sort of seem to fluctuate wildly.
Mm.
But anyway.
Do we have any other points about Queenie we want to bring up?
Given that the movie ended with her and Jacob, this is just all I have to say about this, I definitely feel that their story's not over. And the movie wouldn't have ended with them, with you know, secondary characters, if we weren't going to see them later on down the road. And especially two characters who ended up being so loved.
Yeah.
So, I'm just hopeful and excited to see where the future in these films take them.
Me too.
I think I sort of want to clarify. Yeah. I think I sort of want to clarify what I was trying to say before, which I think I think my interpretation of what I saw came out wrong. But I think when she was sort of saying Tina was the worker bee, I think I saw her saying that as a statement of fact, and I interpreted it, you know, from, I guess, the Muggle perspective. But I was thinking about, like, Molly Weasley and that kind of stuff. Like, I think it's similar. It's that those roles aren't, like, they're not put down the same way in the wizarding world, I don't think. I don't know. It made me think about it. Anyway.
You're fine. Everyone's gonna view it from their own different perspective.
Well, yeah, but I haven't, like, thought about it enough to really, like, figure it, like, you know, like, figure it out, like, exactly how I feel about it. Anyway.
I just think Queenie is a wonderful character, and we started to get a glimpse at all these great things that she can do and how she uses her oh god, I moved my computer and it made a sound. How she can use her legitimacy and, like, the positive spin that I guess we haven't necessarily seen before. Even, you know, like when Harry was learning occlumency, you know, he was being taught that legitimacy was bad and to just block everything out. So it's nice to see a positive spin. As, you know, it'll be good to see more of Queenie and how she develops, because I almost feel like she's kind of the Hermione, in a way. Not maybe necessarily in exactly, like, book smarts, but, you know, the whole, like, clever on her feet, you know, she was like, oh, get in this case, I'll get you out of here. That's all, you know, I feel like that's something that Hermione, like, would have came up with.
I think that's interesting you bring up Hermione, because, especially in the movies, and, I mean, I think it's been talked about a lot, like, Emma Watson ended up, she basically, you know, I mean, in some ways, she almost took, Rupert Grint's role, and she just became this sort of unbelievably perfect, I guess, ideal of what a woman could be like. And I really like Fantastic Beasts in that I think Tina and Queenie are just, you can see, I think they're being portrayed almost in a more well-rounded way. I'd hazard that.
I think that the characters in this movie are equivalent to JKR's characterization in the books. She just creates these unique, like, fully developed, rich characters. And she was, I think, successfully able to translate that into her screenplay. And these characters are just so, like, they're so different than anybody else that you've ever seen on screen. And I think Queenie is an excellent example of that. She's very specifically Queenie.
Hmm.
Nice.
Yay, Queenie! Yeah.
I love the ownership Alison Siddall has of her, though. She's just like, I never did movies before, but I had to be her. You're just like, excellent.
So that's it for today's main discussion. But if you would like to get to know more richly developed characters, Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. All you have to do is go to audible.com/speakbeastie and browse their huge selection of audio programs. You can download a title for free and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audible.com/speakbeastie. That's audible.com/speakbeastie and get started today. And I will say, I have been listening to the Harry Potter audiobooks on Audible every single day on my way to work on the train. And it's, like, so entertaining. It takes me out of the train, and I feel like, I don't know, it just makes the commute so much more pleasant.
How appropriate, though, listening to Harry Potter on the train. I just feel...
It's not, like, a cool train. It's, like, a lame train.
Still.
What, do you guys listen to any audiobooks?
Yes, but because I'm a history nut, downloaded Ian Kershaw's Hitler, which is just a Hitler biography, and it goes for, I think, 40-plus hours. I haven't finished it yet. I think I'm about 10 hours in, and it's really value for money because I got it with my $15 a month subscription, so it's great. Nice. But, if you're into history, Audible's great for that, too.
Yeah. Ever since watching A Series of Unfortunate Events on Netflix, because I grew up with those books much in the same vein as I did with Harry Potter, I decided to go back. But I didn't have all the books. I have scattered. It's like I have the first book and the fifth book and the ninth book. It's just... they're all over the place, and I was like, you know, I'm not going to sit here and read, and I actually have a bit of a commute going to my internship and class this semester, so I thought those would be the best to listen to. And my next audiobook that I actually want to tackle is a whopping 19 hours and 20-some minutes, I think. It's American Gods by Neil Gaiman. It's actually going to be a series on, I think, Stars or Showtime. And I just really wanted to start that before watching it, because I'm one of those, you know, I have to read or listen to the book before the movie or TV show adaptation. So
in terms of audiobooks, I've always been interested in listening to the Game of Thrones series through audiobooks.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm wondering, because I tried to read them on, like, ebooks, and I had a really hard time with it, and I feel like that can happen to a lot of people, just with the language and the style of writing. So I wonder if listening to it in, like, an audiobook format would help me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it would make it worse. I don't know if it would make it better. So that would probably be what I would want to try next.
Well, one of the good things about Audible is that you can actually just go back 30 seconds. So if you miss something, you can go back a couple of minutes easily and re-listen to it. Because, at first when I was listening to the Hitler stuff, it's very, very dense. And, and if I go off track for a second, I lose where the hell I am. But if you just, that's what's really great about it. You can just go back really easily and listen through to it again. It's good.
I definitely have to try it then, because I have like an hour and a half long commute to work.
Yeah,
on the train. So,
ugh, that's terrible.
Yeah, that's why I want to move. But I take like one train and then I have the subway, so it would definitely be a nice change of pace instead of just listening to everyone grumble in the morning.
Another thing that I like about it is it has this feature called Whisper Sync. And so if I'm listening to Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix on my commute on Audible, and then I get home and I want to pick it up in book format, I can open my Kindle, and because they all like sync up together, my Kindle will just know where my audiobook left off.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really cool.
That is cool.
We would like to thank Audible for sponsoring this episode.
Yes,
thank you,
Audible.
And now for this week's Time Turner, which is Shannon's specialty, obviously, but I'm going to try to do it justice without her. The event that I wanted to talk about is kind of relevant. It happened in 1926, but it took place in Britain, but I wanted to talk about it because it's kind of like an apocalypse scare, and it reminded me of Fantastic Beasts a little bit in that sense. So there was this radio show called Broadcasting the Barricades by Father Ronald Knox in Scotland in 1926. And yes, he is a priest. Just bear that in mind.
Okay.
It makes it better. So according to a site called hoaxes.org, in January 1926, BBC Radio interrupted a broadcast of a speech from Edinburgh to give a special announcement. An angry mob of unemployed workers were running amok in London, looting and destroying everything in sight. Listeners were stunned. Anxiously, they gathered around their radios as the alarming reports continued, informing them that the National Gallery had been sacked, the Savoy Hotel blown up, and the Houses of Parliament were being attacked with trench mortars. Which I don't actually know what that is. I meant to look it up and forgot.
Aren't they those little hammer type? Hold on. They are. They're
tiny hammers?
Yeah. Oh, no. No, no, no.
I'm looking it up because I'm trying to help you out.
It's like a...
like a cannon?
Oh. I'm not even sure what it... I mean, it sort of looks like... well, it's some kind of... what would you call that?
Catapult?
Yes.
A something catapult?
Like that. Yeah, something like that.
Oh, wow.
Out of something.
It's a fire weapon. Mm-hmm.
Wow. It's like artillery.
Yeah. I guess it's like a very short-range missile-type launcher.
That's pretty severe.
Yes.
So, thank you for that. So, the news was accompanied by the sounds of a mob in the background and explosions in the distance. So this guy was sitting there, like, making up this whole story. And he also had sound effects. Because, you know, be prepared. And at this point, people started to panic. Listeners in London rushed out into the streets in an attempt to flee the city, while those outside the city phoned the authorities and newspapers to find out what was going on. But when they did that, the authorities and newspapers were like, there's nothing going on. And everybody was like, oh my god! And yeah, so there was this big, hilarious, like, scare in 1926 because this priest was sitting in his house in Scotland on the radio, like, broadcasting this fake riot. And, fun fact, it later became the inspiration for Orson Welles' War of the Worlds.
I was just gonna say!
Yep.
There's a thing that happened just like this.
Yeah. So I thought that was fun because, it reminded me of, like, the beast destroying the city, and people in 1926 were pretty impressionable because they didn't have the internet, so.
Oh!
There we go.
So this may have actually happened, and then afterwards the wizarding community, like, sold it off as a hoax. I see where you're
going. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I like it. This also reminded me of like the opening of Half Blood Prince, where the minister of magic or minister for magic, I never remember which one it is. The minister goes and he meets with the prime minister, and they're like, "Oh yeah, all that stuff." Nah, that was us. Sorry, Mabi. Mabi, there are some giants going on, and it's been a mess. But we're cleaning it up. Oh, and your security guard? Yeah, yeah, he's one of us. It's all good. That's why he's so good. He's just a real good guy. That's what it reminded me of. Just like that too. Still upset that was cut from the movie. Not getting that back.
So great. I love how J.K. Rowling, it wouldn't have worked though, I don't think, in a film scene, because I love the way J.K. Rowling like described the Prime Minister as being really irritated and like, I just won an election and what is this? And just finding out, no, you are not in charge of anything. It's great. Anyway, I loved it.
All right, want to tackle the nuke case?
All right, it's time for the nuke case. And once again, whenever I am faced with an audience of Americans or any other nationality, I suddenly become incredibly patriotic. So I chose...
Oh my god!
So I chose the only other... last time I think I did this, I did the billywig, which was the weird little blue insect, which is Australian. And this time, the only other fantastic beast that J.K. Rowling has mentioned is Australian, which is the Antipodean opali. Except she doesn't actually say it's Australian. She says it's New Zealand. It's a New Zealand dragon. But it will migrate to Australia in search of territory, which I think is a bit rich because it's called the opal eye. And Australia has 90% of the world's opal deposits and New Zealand has none or has very little. So anyway.
Well, you told her.
I just get constantly irritated by this stuff. I'm such a terrible person. But basically, it resides in valleys, which I'm assuming is some kind of allusion to the fact that we're down under and everything's upside down because usually dragons are meant to be on mountains. I got that, J.K. Rowling. Hilarious. Anyway, and it's generally considered to be one of the most beautiful dragons, of course, with pearly scales that line its body and glittering multicolored eyes that have no pupils and will probably look like an opal. The opalized eggs are pale gray and have been known to be mistaken by muggles for fossils, and its flame
just
is a vivid
educating
red,
us.
So not very hot.
So the opal eye... This is the snarkiest nuke case ever. It's great.
It's so snarky today for some reason.
It's awesome. Please continue.
So this actually really irritated me. I don't know why today is just not a good day. Anyway, the opal eye is not particularly aggressive, rarely killing unless it is hungry, making it the easiest of the dragons to train. Its prey of choice is sheep. This irritates me. Because sheep were not brought to New Zealand until, like, the late 1700s. So...
Why do you know
it
this?
It couldn't have been eating sheep before that. So, therefore, what did it come in? Like, it's presumably native. Anyway, and it's been known to attack large animals. So, I'm assuming before the 1700s, it was eating dolphins and seals and maybe a moa, which apparently got, like, was made extinct in, like, the 1500s, but they were like a giant land bird, a bit like the Australian emu, I think. And the other thing was that in the 1970s, several kangaroo killings were thought to have been caused by a male opal eye that had been ousted from its territory by a dominant female. Which is interesting to know. I'm not sure exactly what the 1970s kangaroo killings is in reference to, because we do have kangaroo cullings a lot, because there's just, yeah, I mean, you know, there's loads of them in Australia and they get in the way of farming and all that kind of stuff. So, I'm not really sure what that was in reference to, but there you are, the Antipodean opal eye.
That was my favorite nuke case. I'm not going to lie.
Sorry, Aaron.
Anyway.
You really brought... Because... Oh, man. You brought so much of your own knowledge and I don't want to say experience.
I don't know.
But
I don't know when sheep came to my country.
Yeah, you just knew all this information about sheep.
Well, yeah. But it's because we just don't have... I mean, sheep come from Eurasia. Like, we don't have animals that work like that. Shout out to... There's an amazing book. Pretty sure it's an audiobook on Audible. And it's called Guns, Germs, and Steel. And it's about the last 13,000 years of human history. And it really details where all the amazing mammals and, everything that we eat today comes from and how it moved around the world. And sheep came from Eurasia. So, anyway, fun fact. But, yeah, if you want to read that book, it's great. I'll listen to it.
You're just the coolest.
Yeah. Oh,
that's not sarcasm.
Oh, I feel so loved.
Anyway. So I did put... the Opli into Google Images to see, like, what came up. And the fourth picture, it's, like, this drawing. I'm, like, currently obsessed with it because I'm having a flashback to, like, Dragon Tales. I don't know if anybody watched that show.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I did.
Because if you see, like, this picture, and I'll have to show it to you later, basically, like, the way the dragon is colored is it looks like the rock from Dragon Tales.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with the creature necessarily, except for the random drawing from the internet, but Dragon Tales. Great. Great pastime. So that's it for this week's episode. This week's podcast question is, which character would you like us to discuss next and why? And remember that you can send in your fantastic theories, comments, questions, anything really. We'd love to hear from you, so drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com.
Listeners can now find all of our episodes at speakbeastie.com. The website features all of our episodes, as well as a specialized area where you can learn more about the beasts we cover on the show. A forum and shop will be coming soon. Oh, I didn't know that. It's exciting. you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie, on Facebook at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie, on Tumblr at SpeakBeastiePodcast.tumblr.com, and don't forget to visit audible.com/SpeakBeastie to get a free 30-day trial.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Megan.
I'm Eleanor.
And I'm Lizzie.
Case closed.